Hello, Eagles fans.
Eagles Beakley is back again.
Another edition of the Eagles Insider Podcast. Chris McPherson, Bo Wolf, and Fran Duffy. And fans, we've had a couple days now to kind of simmer down. You know, obviously a very, very disappointing loss in Arizona. Arizona's an outstanding team, but the Eagles are right there on the doorstep to steal that win on the road. Not able to get the job done. But
how about them Cowboys?
where's the drop right there? Brian Thomas.
Now's the time for it.
That's the time for it. Could have easily pulled that one in there still.
There it is.
There it is in there. So Washington helping the Eagles out, getting that overtime win on Monday Night Football, keeping the Eagles a half game back. So we'll take a few moments to reflect on that loss to Arizona. But again, big picture, the Eagles are 5-2. I remember last year at the midway point, team was 3-5 or 3-5, and then they go on their streak to 7-8 down the stretch to win the division. They're going to be in much better position. Obviously, a good matchup, tough matchup this weekend against Houston. But big picture, still everything's moving in the right direction for the Eagles. They've lost two games, but both were on the road against very good teams.
Yeah, those trips out west have been tough. And obviously, you know, a couple plays here and there, the Eagles could be 7-0. I guess you could say a couple plays here and there, they could be, I don't know, 1-6 in a worst case scenario or something like that. But I mean, the loss hurts, no question about it. That's a game where I felt like the Eagles were the better team. I think they probably should have won the game. But, you know, as Chip Kelly always talks about, those self-inflicted wounds, 11 penalties, the turnovers in the red zone, sloppy play coming off of the bye, which is a little disappointing. But big picture, take a step back. It's not the worst place to be.
So my reaction from the press box at University of Phoenix Stadium when John Brown's going over the top, scores that touchdown,
He really does, by the way. Sorry to cut you off. Yeah. You were right. He looks like Marvin the Martian when with that helmet. It's like way too big for his body.
I wasn't making it up. Lots of film studies.
What did you say this? Was this one studying
in college? I didn't say Marvin the Martian, but I like that.
His head. His helmet is just way too big for his. Like, he's got a tiny little head. It's funny.
So he's breaking up down for the touchdown, and it was just one of those things where you saw the play unfold, and you're like, this is the one thing that can't happen. The only thing that they cannot do in this situation. And I tweeted from the At Eagles Insider account, how does this happen?
And well, it was better. It was better than if they had scored a touchdown with, you know, no time remaining.
Yes. You start getting nervous because all of a sudden they're reviewing and like, oh, his knee might have been out. I'm like, no, just give him the touchdown now and give the Eagles a chance to go down the field.
I mean, Kerry Williams very nearly knocked that ball out. I mean, it could have rolled through the back of the end zone, and then that would have been it. That would have been an unbelievable play. I don't think that gets talked about, obviously, because they scored. But
yeah.
Look, I mean, it was a game of what ifs where, you know, there's all the, whenever you have a game that goes down to the wire like that and all the mistakes, you know, two red zone turnovers and 11 penalties and, you know, obviously the two big plays on defense, a lot of situations where players and coaches are going to look back and say, oh man, you know, what if, you know, this had happened? What if I had made this call? What if I had made that tackle? Look, they'll learn from it. Like you said, they're 5-2. And the big thing, I think, is not letting the Arizona Cardinals beat you twice. Go down to Houston, take care of the Texans, and continue to move on.
That's a good point there. With the thing with Nate Allen, obviously giving up that big touchdown, is he made such a brilliant play earlier in the game where he stripped Andre Ellington and was able – and the more amazing play was keeping – getting the ball, securing the ball, and then getting both feet in bounds and staying in bounds to be able to get the fumble and then have, you know, that bad play at the end of the game. So it's –
And you you understand why he's biting on that, because they got to get the first down.
Yes.
But obviously, you've got deep responsibility. Mm-hmm. You can't get beat deep there. So
and it was
he knows it was a mistake. And
yeah, I mean, look, it was one of those two things too, where the Cardinals they were kind of showing what they call a levels concept, where that outside receiver is going to be running that dig route, and they had run it earlier in the drive. They ran it in the drive before, so they show it, they show it, they show it, and now they're going to try and beat you over the top. So. Look, I mean, it's one of those plays where they beat you, they got him, and, you know, they'll fix it moving forward.
And what's frustrating is outside of that and the Larry Fitzgerald touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald, by the way, must be the biggest Eagle killer of this generation by a mile.
It's got to be. One of them.
So outside of those two big plays, defense was outstanding.
Outstanding.
It was very, very good.
245 yards if you take those two plays out.
Yeah.
That's pretty – that's. I mean, look, those plays count, obviously.
Right. Yes,
but,
yes.
That's it. Kind of shows what you're dealing with when you have you take those two plays away, and that's the difference between a game like the Giants, where look, everything went really, really well for the defense. We didn't let them into the end zone. You take those two plays out, you're consistent across the board, and good things happen.
Now let's talk about the offense for a second. Nick Foles, very up and down day. You look at the numbers, over 400 passing yards, two touchdowns. Made some amazing throws. That one where he's rolling out and he hits Riley Cooper for 50 yards was brilliant. You know, the nice long touchdown to Jerry Maclin.
That was a great throw.
You know, he made some amazing plays. And then, but you have the couple of turnovers. You have the interceptions once again. And the fact of the matter is he's throwing the ball 62 times throughout the course of the game. So much was on his shoulders in this matchup.
Well, I mean, look, this was a team you're going in to face the Arizona Cardinals. They've been so good against the run. And then when you lose Patrick Peterson, you know, in the middle of the game, there were matchups to be won. And for the most part, they won those matchups. I mean, Jeremy Maclin and Jerod Powers, they showed last year that we were able to create plays against Jerod Powers. So I don't blame them for going that direction. And look, they also moved the ball really well on the ground as well. So overall with the offense, I mean, look, there are plays you like to have back, but – you know, it was still a good performance overall.
I was surprised that they passed as much as they did and didn't run a little bit more. Even though that, you know, the Cardinals have the number one run defense, they were winning matchups on the outside. They were getting stuff up the middle too. I mean, you saw in that last drive, and maybe that's because it was the fourth quarter and you know, the defense was a little tired. But I thought they were a little pass happy. But the thing with Foles is it's just so hard to rectify. The quarterback we've seen this season versus the quarterback we saw last year, only in terms of protecting the ball. I mean, everybody knows about the two interceptions last season. He leads the league in turnovers this year. I mean, for this offense to be working on all cylinders, he has to protect the football. He knows that, and I guess we were hoping that some of that would get cleaned up in during the bye week or whatever. But you know, I don't want to steal an Andy Reid line, but he's got to do a better job.
Yeah, I would agree that the biggest surprise is this is coming off the bye. Because you figured all those hits that he took, you know he was battered around those first few games of the season. You figure he gets rested during the bye week. He's fully healthy. He's good to go. No issues there. And you go out and just sling the ball. And he did for the most part, but had the couple of turnovers there.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it around the league with lots of different quarterbacks. Who, you know, I know Philip Rivers, who's playing lights-out football right now. There were a couple years where, I mean, he was turning the ball over and he was inaccurate and was kind of shaky in the pocket. And now you look at him and, you know, and it's a completely different story. So I don't think it's a career-defining time in his, you know, for Nick Foles over the first seven games of the season so far. But look, he's like Bo said, he's just got to do a better job. I think, you know, they'll get it corrected, I think.
He's still a young quarterback. I think that's
exactly.
The one thing that most fans have to realize is that he's in his first full season as a starter. Yes, he started all those games last season. Was phenomenal. But this is the first time where he's been the guy for the entirety of the season. So that's something that, you know, still has to factor into it, that he's still growing and developing into the position. And probably the bar was just set so high from that 27-2 year, 29-2 if you include the playoffs, that it was going to be hard to match that.
Yeah, I mean, we all expected some kind of, you know, regression in that touchdown-interception ratio, obviously. But it's been a little too much.
So we'll start look ahead to the Houston Texans. You know, everyone, I'm sure when you looked at the schedule, said they won two games last year. You know, who's their quarterback? This should be an easy win. They've been very, very tough thus far. And if not for a few spurts in the Colts game and the Steelers game, they might be even better than their 4-4 record at this point.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, it all runs through Arian Foster in that run game. I touched on it a little bit in Monday's piece was – The Eagles' ability to defend the stretch run play over the course of the season has been really, really impressive. They did it again against Arizona. They did it against Washington. A couple of the other teams that they faced like to run that play, and they've done a really good job shutting it down. Well, they're going to be tested now because you've got Houston, and that's their favorite run play, is that stretch play to the outside, giving Arian Foster, you know, his choice of different cutback lanes. And he's a big physical runner, and he's healthy right now. And if it weren't for DeMarco Murray, I think Arian Foster would be the talk of the town right now in terms of running backs in the league.
He's second in the league, and he's so good, not just in the run game, but the pass game as well.
Yep.
Three touchdowns against Tennessee, and he's so patient. He really understands that zone blocking scheme. He's very patient as a runner. He's so smooth as a runner, so he's going to be very, very tough to bring down.
But I also, you know, I have so much confidence right now in the front seven of this Eagles defense. That's been the best part of the Eagles defense, obviously, so far. And, you know, getting Michael Kendricks back healthy. I have a lot of faith that they'll be able to do a pretty good job against Arian Foster.
Yeah, no question about it. It's going to be one of those things that it's going to be fun to watch with guys like Fletcher Cox and Benny Logan and D'Amico and all those guys up front. It's going to be a fun match. That's going to be the biggest matchup that determines the outcome of this game.
One of the biggest surprises from last Sunday is that they didn't sack Carson Palmer once.
They got a lot of good pressure on him.
Yes.
And that was
a pressure.
That was a good example of, you know, sacks not being a good barometer of how much pressure you're getting, because they hit him a lot, not just got the ball out quickly. They hit him a lot. So
yeah, and there were a couple where Trent Cole had him dead to rights on the one, and he wrestled himself loose, and he almost threw a pick. So it's just one of those things where sometimes the sacks are there and sometimes they're not.
Now on the flip side, though, Fitzpatrick has been sacked 11 times in the last three games. So the protection there, it'll be very interesting to see, especially when you have all the former Texans coming back to Houston to play the Eagles.
Easiest bet of the week for me is that Connor Barwin will tip a Ryan Fitzpatrick pass this week. That's what I'm going to say.
He's had a lot of passes knocked down.
Yeah, he's
at the line
of
scrimmage.
Small. He's a small little guy.
And you figure you go against J.J. Watt in practice every day, right? He might be able to rectify that situation. But
would you say that J.J. Watt is the greatest human with a double initial first name in history?
In history.
In history. Wow.
I would say
double initial.
Double initial. Doesn't have to be JJ. I mean, he's obviously better than JJ Stokes, but
Tittle? I mean, if we're going
double of the same
initial. Oh, same. Gotcha.
I'm thinking BB King is the leader in the clubhouse here.
Oh, that's good.
BT, you have anything?
Well, there's LL Cool J.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I would go BB King, JJ Watt, LL Cool J.
No, I go LL Cool J second, but then again, I'm a little older than you guys, so that's more in my wheelhouse. LL Cool J's
got
the classics.
Man, good. I like this a lot. We are going to have to bring this up with our guest coming up here.
Let's see. I'm trying to think who else is in the battle here? I'm trying to go through the alphabet.
This is a good one. I like this. I wish I'd known this. I would have created a good list.
Yeah,
I'm sticking with.
You're sticking with your top three.
BB King, JJ Watt, LL Cool J.
JJ Stokes not.
JJ Stokes is last.
No. Yeah. He was a decent receiver for the 49ers. A little bit.
He's okay.
but it's like we sat around trying to name Franz.
Yeah. We got to four.
We got to three. We didn't even get to four.
So this one beat that
and
list
you were,
out.
And
we
you
got
were
the
one
three
of them.
Present company included. Yeah.
Exactly. So we're sitting there who else do we have here? So
the double initial thing is what gets you.
Now you're just throwing for a loop. Franz out of his comfort zone right now.
I know. I'm not. Next segment.
Let me transition here. Keep it a little lighthearted here, Fran. Your first road trip since 2010?
The first 2011. My last road trip was he jumped. We talked about it with Mike Quick last week. That was the last road trip for me. So
wow.
So that was good. Yeah. It was look.
I thought that was a home game,
no?
No, I was in Buffalo. Ralph Wilson.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
That's right.
How many times have we seen Ryan Fitzpatrick? He was the big tie in Cincinnati, which saved the season in 2008.
Right. I didn't think
that
about
saved
that.
The season.
Wow!
Did they play him in when he was a Ram too?
Ooh, I don't think so. I don't recall him as a.
Well, this is big because I wonder if it was a tie against Cincinnati and a loss against Buffalo. Got to round it up.
Now you get the win. So
I wonder if the Eagles have ever faced another quarterback with three different teams.
Ooh.
It sounds like a Wolf.
I'm sorry. I'm gonna look at it. I'm gonna find out the answer, but I don't know if it's
it sounds like a BFF stat.
That's
a good one. That's a good one. So Bo doesn't like when everyone has, because everyone now has suggestions for the Wolfstein column. It's like, oh, why don't you do this? Why don't you do this stat? So
I'll handle this myself.
And he just sits there and politely nods and is kind of like,
oh yeah, I'll think about that.
I don't know about politely.
Yeah, Bo is not polite whatsoever. So no, he usually do the little head nod and be like, okay, thank you, sure. No, that Cincinnati tie.
The problem is that even if it is a good idea, I didn't come up with it myself. So I don't want to do it.
Nobody has to know.
Most of the time, it's not a good idea, but
nobody has to know.
But I will know. That's all.
Oh, jeez, Mr. Prideful over here.
Yeah, absolutely.
That I remember that tie in Cincinnati. I remember sitting standing in the corner of the stadium on the field as the final seconds were ticking off, and you were just like. It was just a brutal, painful game to watch. Everyone remembers it for the Donovan and the OT rules and all that. But
well, the most brutal thing is that now anytime a game goes to like the tail end of overtime, everyone starts tweeting
about Donovan.
Yeah.
And
it'd be funny if you wore a Bengals tie on Fox at some point.
That would be good. We should hit him up on Twitter.
I'm still thinking
what
of
double
initials.
What do you think of? He can't even think about anything else, so. He's like, I don't even want to talk about anything to this point.
No.
But it was just remarkable how bad that tie was, and then you go to the end of the season, and that win over Dallas would not have been possible without Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's actually without the kicker missing it, to be honest. Was it Shane Graham, was it?
It might have been Shane Graham.
I feel like it was Shane Graham who missed it.
What about J.J. Abrams?
Oh, good one. He's got to be up the top of the list, near the top.
He's ahead of Stokes, that's for sure.
Definitely ahead of Stokes, so he made top three. J.J. Abrams is in there.
No. LL Cool J is the bottom line.
Yeah,
top three.
LL Cool J, okay.
Where are you going?
No, see, I disagree on that, but that's fine.
You go to the top?
Yeah. Not to the top. No, B.B. King's got to be number one.
Oh, man. All right, so maybe he's top four. J.J. Abrams, good one. I got nothing after that.
Okay.
All right. Well, why don't we bring on our special guest, and then we can debate this later on the show.
Sounds good.
Our special guest on this week's Eagles Insider podcast, none other than one of the former Houston Texans who will be going back to
Houston.
One of
the many.
One of the many. One of the seven on the current roster. Linebacker, Brian Braman. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, first I want to ask you is this. It has been said that it's a privilege to play on this Eagles special teams unit. What does it mean to you to play on this unit that has been so productive, so dangerous, so deadly early in the football season?
I mean, it means a lot. It means a lot to you know, probably everybody on the squad, you know, every guy that's, you know, played a part in the special teams, you know, the accolades that we've acquired, you know, we work hard for it, and it's definitely a standard that we've set up for ourselves at the beginning of the year back in OTAs before camp started and stuff, so it feels good to be a part of it. You know, it's definitely exciting.
Is there a different mindset here than maybe when you were at Houston in terms of the way the team approaches special teams to make it so prolific?
You know, it's a copycat league. There, you know, there really isn't too much that you can change other than the players, you know, really the mindset that they carry into it and being able to, you know, take a different approach. I don't see too much being different. You know, it's a special teams mentality either way you look at it.
Is there a guy you're most looking forward to, you know, clashing with on the field on Sunday?
You know, FIP does a great job with matchups. So I just, you know, I don't want to get my head too wrapped up in it. I'm just going to kind of sit back and see what he brings to the table as far as who he matches up with me. And that's when I'll start getting into it. You know, I'll see if I can hit him up and give him a hard time, get him, you know, give him a heads up that I'm going to be coming for him.
Okay.
What's your favorite unit of the four core units?
I don't have favorites. Yeah. I actually don't have favorites in football.
Taking the politically correct answer. Yeah. Yeah. Come on.
I love all phases of
the
game.
What about least
man.
Favorite?
I love the game too much to say that there's any part of it that I don't like.
What is the biggest secret in terms of the punt block? Because you watch the All-22, and it seems like everyone just does such a great job of firing off the football and making it confusing for the linemen to decipher who they're going to have to block or making it a quick decision to open up for someone else. What do you think is the biggest key there?
Just us, you know, being prepared, ready to go, and really just believing that every single one of us is going to be the one to make the play. You know, we come off, we want to come out there and be the aggressor. We're going to try and hit them in the mouth and put them on their heels so that way they're fighting to stay on their feet for the rest of the game.
So now what do you miss most about Houston, if there is one thing?
Yeah, I'd probably say just family and food. I'm a big foodie.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of great restaurants out here in Philadelphia. You know, it's a little different on the East Coast than it is in the South. But, you know, I love the Cajun food. You know, they got a Whataburger down there. I'm excited about get a burger, and, you know, milkshake, and but definitely just the Southern, you know, food, soul cooking.
Now, have you found any spots here in Philly?
You know, I've actually tried Miss Tootsie's as far as you know the Southern food goes, but like I said, you know, I don't really have favorites. There's too many too much good food out there for you to enjoy for me to say I like one more than the other.
Now you have a daughter.
I do.
Correct. Blakely, is it correct?
Yes.
And how old?
7 months now.
7 months old. So
yeah. So
are you able to even get out in the city? I was gonna say.
She's actually in Houston with her mother.
Back in Houston,
so I'm really excited. She actually comes up for all the home games.
Nice.
So I get to see her for the home games, and she's gonna be at the Houston and the Dallas game in Dallas. So
that's
she's
awesome.
Gonna be able to make it to about 9 games. So I'm definitely excited. She's she's growing up fast. You know, she's got this new little walker toy that she actually just stood up and took a couple steps with. So it's definitely interesting, because when I was just in there in Houston for the bye week, you know, she just started crawling.
Really?
And to see her starting to, you know, stand up by herself, you know, take a couple steps with her toys and stuff, it's like she needs to slow down a little bit.
So how do you go from kill, maim, destroy on the football field and tackling guys without a helmet to being daddy?
I mean,
on the other end,
she does it. Yeah. I don't think it has anything to do with me. Just being able to see her face, you know, she's the prettiest. So I think she's the one that kind of brings me back down to the norm.
I feel like it's only going to be a couple months before she's running down the field without a helmet on and like trying to tackle the other kids on
as
the block.
Fast as she's going. I don't see that being too far away.
That's good.
So, with everything you've been through, Brian, what's it like to be able to provide for her and to be able to give her a life that you didn't have when you were growing up?
It's an unbelievable feeling. Obviously, everybody wants that for their family. You know, being able to give their children something that they weren't able to have when they were a kid. So, you know, being able to, you know, think about her first and understand that I'm out here not for myself anymore. I'm out here doing it for her. So it's definitely a big deal. And, you know, I really look forward to seeing, you know, what she takes an interest in and what I'll be able to help her out and give her in order to help her, you know, excel and succeed in whatever area or whatever interest she decides to pick up through her, you know, younger age.
Would you ever allow her to be a model?
Whatever makes her happy. However she wants to go about it, you know, I think that was a part of my upbringing. You know, my mother, she didn't care, you know, as long as I wasn't getting in trouble and I wasn't doing anything illegal, she supported it. If it made me happy, she was happy and she wanted to see me do well in it. So I feel like that, you know, played a big part in me being very specific in what I wanted to do and what I loved, and really gave me a passion and a drive to understand that I can do anything I put my mind to. So right now we're actually in the phase where we don't say no. We try to encourage her to do something other than, you know, what she's doing. If she's doing something that we don't want her to do, you know, we try to talk to her and tell her, you know, hey, you should try to do something else, or, you know, hey, you know, we don't need to do this, or, you know, anything other than the word no, because, you know, her mother and I really don't want her to think that she can't do anything. We just want her to know that there could possibly be better things out there for her to do.
Wait till she starts talking back.
Yeah.
And then get back to me if that positive reinforcement plan is working for you.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes.
Do the guys in the locker room give you a hard time about the modeling career?
Every once in a while it's brought up, you know, when you look back at some of the pictures from the, you know, back in the day when I was actually trying to get into it, I was a little smaller. I was probably about 30 pounds smaller, and I had short hair. So
you're clean shaven.
I've gone through a couple different phases, but they do give me a hard time. It's kind of fallen off. When I was a rookie, I mean, it was every day. But since I've kind of become more of a vet, it's kind of fallen off. They give me a hard time every once in a while, though.
So there are a total of 7 former Texans.
Yeah,
that are on the roster. 2 of them are also in the linebacker group. Can you tell us something about D'Amico? Something about Connor that most fans might not know about?
Connor was kind of the guy that took me under his wing when I was in Houston.
Okay.
You know, he kind of showed me the ropes. I backed him up, you know, as a rookie, being able to look up to him and see the way you're supposed to act as a professional, the way the programs run and stuff like that. I'm not really sure if anybody knew that I had backed him up in Houston for 2 years, but that's the case. And then D'Amico just... you know, the good guy that he is, you know, he's just an unbelievable leader. You know, he was the same way in Houston. It didn't matter, you know, what it came down to. He's definitely been, you know, implemental in, you know, being a leader in the defense, understanding, you know, the way things go. And, you know, he's definitely somebody that everybody on the team can go to.
Do you see a difference or a maturation from either one of them now that you've been with them in one place, now you're with them here and they have different roles here?
You know, there's definitely a different type of confidence with Connor. You know, the getting his deal, coming here to play here, and definitely stepping into more of a leadership role. I can see that, you know, he's definitely, you know, accepted that role. And and D'Amico, he's the same. He's been a leader since he was, you know, out the womb. He's been leading the way for everybody, you know, captain, you know, defensive captain, somebody that's, you know, our NFLPA rep, you know, just a cool guy, somebody that, you know, you can go to for anything that you need.
All right, so Brian, we're going to transition to our last segment of the show, and it's what we call Fails of the Week. We're actually going to have them here on video to check them out. So the first one we have is from the Vikings-Buccaneers game, and with less than a minute left, the Vikings are driving down the field, and during a timeout, the Bucs cheerleaders come out on the field, and I don't think they're supposed to be on the field at this time, but nonetheless, there they are trying to distract the players. Brian, do you ever... does it ever cause a distraction for you when?
That's actually, I've never seen that before.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
Especially out there on the field of play. Like, I've seen them in the end zone.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, and TV timeouts and stuff, but never in the field of play.
They're trying.
That is bizarre.
Home field advantage.
Hey, that.
Well, it didn't work.
No, it didn't work. That's right.
Mark that one up.
They tried. Number four, Raiders at the Browns. The Raiders line up for a field goal, then fake it. Then line up for a play, and then this happens. Matt Schaub throws his first pass in a while. Oh, and it gets...
Because I was following this game on the GameCast because I had the Browns.
Well, here's look at this. And we got the quote. Why would we call that right there? So
did he say that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to see this again.
That's great. I was wondering how Matt Schaub managed to throw an interception.
And you played with Schaub.
I did play with Schaub. Yes. You know, he's a smart player. So
he knew that was dumb.
I feel for him right there. You said it was a field goal. They lined up
it
to
was
kick a field goal.
For a field goal. Then they faked it. And then that's when he threw the
busted snap. I mean, I feel like it could have gone differently.
So number three, and, you know, Brian, when you get a sack, just don't do what Lamar Houston does here.
Oh, this is
I thought he would have learned from the linebacker
in
Detroit.
Who was it?
Tulloch.
Stephen Tulloch.
Stephen Tulloch,
right.
Yes. So
that's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, so note to everyone out there, do not celebrate. First of all, you shouldn't be celebrating when you're down 25 points in the fourth quarter. And you're sacking the backup rookie quarterback. It's not even Tom Brady. Tom Brady, I can maybe understand, but it's Jimmy Garoppolo. It's not worth celebrating there. Number two, Sammy Watkins. On the bottom of the screen here, he's going to be going for the touchdown. Oh, yeah. And a little premature celebration here. He's almost – he's got it. He starts the finger wagging.
He's trying to get the Usain Bolt.
It's weird because he looks like he's looking at the screen, right?
You know, he's trying to look himself on the video board. He realizes he's going to go in for the long touchdown. And – little too soon there. So
I feel like every year there's always somebody that either, you know, drops the ball right before the goal line celebrating.
We've had that here in Philadelphia. So yeah.
has definitely just decided to, you know, instead of finishing the play, they're worried about what they're going to look like on TV.
Exactly.
So Chris Maragher sat in the same exact seat that you're sitting in the week before he scored his touchdown and said that he was going to have this great celebration, and then he clammed up after he scored.
Yeah, he sure did. He some of us and the guys told him that he just needs to put that one back in the pocket.
Yeah.
Never bring it back out.
He wasn't quite sure what to do. It was like he was trying to do like a little walk there, and it was a total mess.
Yeah. Yeah. He could have come up with something a little bit.
Do you have something planned?
I have nothing.
You've got nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to get out there and play. You know, I'm kind of a screamer. I get kind of fired up. I'll probably start headbutting people and stuff. But I'm not somebody that's a
real with helmet on or helmet off.
I mean, it depends on how they come up to me. You know? If I'm taking my helmet off and they look like they're going to headbutt, I'm not shying away.
Player safety, Brian.
Yeah,
player safety.
Safety first.
And number one, or 1B, I'm sorry, we're actually going to go to London. This is what the Falcons put on their website. And look at number three.
That's funny.
Dot number three. They said that was England. I don't think that's England.
Yeah, that looks like Spain.
Yeah, there you go. See?
That's so bad.
See, even Brian Brayman quickly points out that, yeah, that's not where they're headed to, and maybe that's why they lost the game.
That's unfortunate.
So, and then, so that was 1B. So
that's
number number one, as we're going to move on from our geography lesson here, I wasn't the best at geography myself, so.
Is that supposed to be Tony Romo?
Yes.
That is supposed to be Tony
Romo.
That is
Tony Romo. Carved in the back
I
of
think
your
that's
head.
Great.
Well, wait a minute. Okay. Brian, of the three of us, who would you say is the most likely to have their face tattooed on another man's body?
That's it. That's a. I like where you're going. With
this. I knew you were going to go with this here. So
I'm
none
not,
of us
yeah,
is,
no comment.
Is
no comment.
There is one of us, and it's arguably better. I don't know if it's better or worse than this guy's.
Well,
haircut.
It's more permanent.
It's definitely more permanent. That's true. That's
so
brutal.
One of you sitting here has a tattoo of another man's face.
No. Our face is tattooed onto another man's body.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Yes. Tatman.
Tatman. Have you ever seen Tatman?
What are you?
I haven't.
What are you, like, back left calf or something like that?
It's I just saw it this weekend. Right leg.
Of course you
calf. Yes. He was one of the thousands upon thousands of fans who were in Arizona.
Which is
awesome. Freaking
the
game.
Fans were awesome Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, the whole stadium, it was awesome because it looked like Christmas because it was
amazing how many Philadelphia fans were in those stands.
Yeah, so
it was unbelievable.
So they had all red, but you just saw splotches of green all over
everywhere.
The place. So
everywhere. It seemed like there was more green in the stands during pregame warm-up and stuff like that than Arizona Cardinals fans.
When Macklin scored that second touchdown, I mean, it sounded like it was at the link.
Yeah,
like
it
the,
went
the
nuts.
Cheering was crazy.
Yeah, it went nuts. There was a couple calls, too, that were made. You know, kind of questionable that were against us, whether they decided to keep it or, you know, overturn it. That, you know, I was like, well, like, what happened?
Good or bad? Yeah,
like,
right.
You don't know.
It's so loud in here. I don't know what's going on.
But yes, Tatman, Chuck Solomon, longtime diehard Eagles fan. It's basically his whole body is just a tribute to the Eagles with tattoos. And
wow,
I mean, players, jersey, retired jersey numbers. You know, division championships, conference championships. He even has the Lombardi Trophy for when we win.
And Chris McPherson.
And Chris McPherson, yes.
Holy smokes.
Yes. It's too far.
So. Holy smokes. Yeah, I'm. You know, I had a couple tattoos when I was younger, but
okay.
I kind of, if I was who I am now back then, I would probably go against getting the tattoos.
And on that note, Brian Braman, thank you very much for joining us here on the Eagles and Empire podcast. So that's going to wrap up this week's edition. So for Fran Duffy, Bo Wolf, I'm Chris McPherson. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week after an Eagles victory.